and welcome to the Volunteer Firefighter Podcast. I'm here with two fire friends. I've got Scott.
Hello.
And I've got Ash.
Oh, hey there.
So what have we got today? We have news? No, not really.
Did we actually come up with any news? Other than there's some, nothing fire related, but grizzly bear attack in Banff, which is, is that actually Alberta? Is Banff Alberta or is that BC?
No, that's Alberta.
That was somewhere in BC for some reason, I don't know. Anyways, in Alberta, Banff, some hikers got attacked by a grizzly bear. I think the police were looking for the bear or shot the bear.
Bear's gone. It's dead. Put down. So, yeah, I'm going to stop there.
Okay, so that was news. All right, moving on, Todd.
Yeah, three died. It's sad. Sucks. Grizzly bears are a thing. I'm a hunter, so I think the grizzly hunt should be back on. But we're not going to get political. Anyways, moving into... we've had a long night already. Let's talk about our week call. We've had a few interesting calls, a few very lucky calls that we've all done. So who wants to start for you guys for some of the MVAs?
Yeah, I can grab one of them. So whatever day it was last week, we got called out for power lines down. So that was the initial call. So, Scott, you're a duty officer, but you can get out of work. You got something going on that day.
It was actually that lunch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was listening to my power lines down.
Yeah.
That's a two-person job.
Yeah. So, I go beetling down to the hall. I grab the officer truck, and I'm responding up to the area where they say that the call is, and I can see my phone buzzing, and the guys are like, that's weird. The power flickered, and then moments later there was a call, and generally lines just don't come falling down for fun. So what is causing this, right? Okay.
Yeah, there was no wind.
No, there was no wind. There was none of that, right? So likely going to be somebody crashed into it, or maybe yanked on the lines with a larger vehicle, something like that. So I pull up pretty close to where I believe it's going to be. And kind of right around the corner, I can start to see lines down. So I stop at a safe distance, kind of get the officer truck parked so no one else can come across. And I hop out to get a better look at it. And sure shit, there's lines everywhere. And there's power lines down. There was tail lines down. It was snaked all over the road. And there's people running around everywhere. And I'm like, stop moving. Everybody stop moving. Because there's power lines down. There's transformer that you can see that was ripped off the power pole on the other side of the incident. It was some pretty heavy potential to be a mess, and there's people walking in the scene. So immediately I'm trying to yell at everybody and say stop, do not move, don't get any closer to it. You on this side, come over to me. So I called one of the guys back, and I was trying to shout to the other side do not move, and they're telling me there's a vehicle in there. I'm like, yeah, I get it, but I'm I can't come any closer. So at that point, I radio to the hall, and I got the next arriving unit to come around the other side. Because still, I can't see it from my side, but I'm not about to leave. So, I'm just going to post up here and get the other truck to come back around the other side.
And this was, this isn't the major highway. This is off to one of the rural side roads and all the farms. So not a lot of close side access streets either, right?
Yeah, correct. There's actually coming off of our golf course, which is super, super rural, and 50K an hour kind of road, and it tees up onto another side street. And, the vehicle didn't stop at the intersection, blew through, ended up missing the power pole, but snagged the guy wire, which then snapped the pole off at the top. Everybody managed to self-extricate, so there was no major injuries to any of the occupants, which is really good. Because it yanked the transformer off the other pole, it actually tripped the main breaker down at the highway. So there was a whole ton of people that were without power. So when they walked away, but as we know with power, these things can try to re-energize if it just bumped it. Because I didn't see, at that point from where I was, I couldn't see if there was any lines broken. I just saw that it was ripped off the pole and, like, down. So we were concerned, but I'm like, hey, if this thing tries to re-energize and there's lines draped everywhere, we're not getting, you know, like, I'm not about to send anybody close until we know that, you know, Fortis comes in, that's our electrical supplier, if they come in and deem it safe, especially knowing that everybody's out of the vehicle. So it was a huge mess, and we were there for a while. Like, power lines down is not a fast call by any means. So, like, our actual skill set on this call was really low, but it had major potential, and there were so many people crowded around the scene that, again, like, major, major potential.
Yeah, and so when you first arrived, you came in access from the north?
Yeah, correct. So I was accessed from the north, heading in towards like the south. I was heading south, and I got posted up, however many hundred feet away from the scene, blocked off access. There was no other way in or out, and I basically parked at the last driveway, so nobody could come in or out of the scene. And then, yeah, again, I got the next arriving unit to come from the south towards the north. And again, that would take care of any access and any traffic coming from that side. And actually, one of our officers was working in his work truck, but he was coming down off the mountain and ended up posting up at the high side of the golf course road. So we basically had the scene managed pretty quickly. But again, like, no one in, no one out. And we were still waiting for BCEHS, for RCMP, and then obviously for Fortis.
Yeah, because I know the ambulance accessed that same route you came in from as well, the first arriving ambulance anyways. And then, of course, I think you guys got them to relocate around from the south. And that takes a bit in that rural area as well, just to send those resources around to where some of the other people are standing. So logistically, that's always quite challenging because we know the step potential for and the distance we need for lines down. And it seems like most MVAs, if we have lines down and once we are confirmed they're down, it's fairly easy to access from either side, like your typical highway call, right? But that one, you can't just sneak by through the orchard.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, like, so I had myself positioned at a safe distance on the northbound side, but there was other intersections further to the north, which, as some secondary arriving units came in, I got them to post up further north from me just to block anybody else from coming as well. And that's actually where EHS went and was doing standby until we could deem that the scene was safe. So just like Todd was saying there, like, for them to reposition themselves, it's like a multiple kilometer drive around to the other access point, right? So, like, they're basically sitting there, and then we end up saying, hey, like, you know, scene safe. I relayed that out to the crew that was out on that point. I got that info over to EHS, because I was about to, like, I actually was going to call dispatch, but then the guys in the bush truck let us know that, hey, they are now arriving on scene, and they are positioned here waiting to be safe, and then they can come in. And I'm like, yeah, like, they're not going to get access because there's so many lines, you know, flown across the road here. Let's get them to come in from the south, and they can get a lot closer to the scene now that we've deemed that the scene's safe through Fortis.
Yeah, and I find, like, a lot of ways, we're stuck going through dispatch, and then dispatch gets a hold of ambulance dispatch gets a hold of the crew, and there's a bit of a delay. When I was at the coast, we had a combined events radio channel, which all agencies could switch to a common channel, and we'd use that as a talk around, which was super, super handy. Like, we have the ability to switch over on our radios for ambulance as well, but we can't actually transmit. It's only listen only, which is quite challenging. I know I was talking with Vic, our unit chief, and I think I have some discussions with you guys to try and clear that up, because, I mean, it's the downside of that is that now you got some other agency talking on your channel, on your TAC channel. However, it's a good option.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, having the ability to speak to, you know, you guys, that side of life, could definitely have a lot of, you know, really good bonuses. I don't really foresee, you know, anybody from BCEHS like over speaking, like, but that's our job. Like, we always clutter up comms. I don't see you guys telling us a really big story. It's basically for those kind of events. Like, hey, we need you guys to bump up. Hey, this, you know, this seems safe. Or on the flip side, if they can hear that we're coming, like, I don't want to jump ahead, but we had a call the other day where we were coming to assist you guys. And if it was a different scenario where you had hands free, you could have given us some of that. Hey, I know you guys are coming now. This is what I'm looking for. Just to save a little bit of that extra time, right?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, like it's there's been so many times where there's been a delay. Like a couple of years ago, we had a fatal house fire when we pulled the patient out, and we ended up working them on the lawn, and we're trying to get a hold of the ambulance, and they were staged a couple of blocks away, and it took forever for our dispatch to get a hold of their dispatch and then to get a hold of the ambulance to actually get them to come in. I think one of our guys actually ended up running up a couple of blocks to grab them just because the delay was ridiculous. And I don't know what exactly happened on that. Sometimes both agency dispatch centers get busy and things get a little bit missed. So yeah, that definitely would help.
Yeah, so I mean there's not a ton to chat about with that call. It was, the front of the vehicle was pretty smashed. The battery was located in the back, so it was easy for us to, once we got access, go in there. Let's make that car safe. Knowing that we were going to be there for a while, like again, any lines down, especially something like that, it's not just like one or two. There was shit everywhere. So I asked Fortis if they could dispatch their road flaggers, because again, like. It's fine for us to be there. Like we're there for the first hour. Anybody that shows up to a call is basically committing themselves to an hour. But like looking at the scene, looking at how much work they had to do, talking with one of the guys, knowing, hey, this is going to be a pretty lengthy scene. Can you guys dispatch some of your flaggers, which they got one or two coming down from Penticton, which was, probably going to take like 45 minutes, but one of them got on scene first, as we were about to break scene. They're like, yeah, we're just going to shrink this scene up now. It's safe now. Let's make it. It was like 20 or 30 feet from the intersection. They just threw up some cones and basically had one person was going to manage it. Now that the scene's safe, and we got ourselves out of there. So again, like not a ton of work to do, but major implications, if you will, of like what could have happened. And it's always good to remind ourselves like the dangers and the safety that we have to think, we have to have in mind when it comes to electricity. It's something that you can't see, something that you don't really think about. And it's not something that we should ever be complacent with, because we've seen a couple videos and we've been in some situations where, definitely could have went the other way. So happy that, this was kind of that ABCD, like cut and dry. And the patients were fine. So,
yeah, that's good. I know it sounded like there's multiple patients, and they're all very lucky to get out. So I know that I think the crews transported a couple of people, but yeah, everyone was in good shape.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of. I eventually went down after I realized you guys needed some more traffic. So I went down to the south end and did basically what the push up was doing. I'm just kind of making sure people weren't going into the scene before getting turned around. But it always amazes me, even though I've been doing this for like 18 years or whatever it is now, that people are going to be like, well, but I got to go that way. Like, no, you don't. Well, and like you said, there's a golf course there. Man, people are like, well, but my tee time's like right now. I'm like, yeah, there's another way around. Well, how? Well,
check out shit to do, man. I got to tee off.
Yeah, they're just like, just can't accept the fact that the road is closed. Well, how long is it going to be closed for? I'm like, I don't know. Like, until it's open. So, I had the cones up, the sign up. I was in my personal vehicle, but, I had my fire vest on, like my safety vest. But, yeah, just the fact people are just like, they just can't accept the fact that, hey, they can't drive through. Even at one point, the post office lady was driving in. And she's kind of, like, zigzagging around everything. And she gets up because by this time I had moved to Guerrero. I remember that I had to get back. And she, like, drives right into the scene. Oh, what do you mean I can't get through? We're like, no. Oh, yeah, I get like rain and sleet and snow and whatever they say, but not power lines down.
That's yeah. Not their motto. Don't fuck with the postie, man. Careful. Yeah. I guess so. Yeah, I'll just jump in. I'll talk about our call that we called you guys for an assist. So I was working EHS, and we got called for a fall with a neck injury. And this gentleman had quite a significant neck injury at that time, what we suspected. And, you know, it's the classic when I kind of teach C-spine management stuff to our guys on our FR department is, you know, if they're not moving and they're self-splinting and they know something's wrong, go with it. Something's probably wrong. And sure enough, this was the classic. This guy did not untangle himself from anything, laying there in a very awkward position, which anybody who wasn't hurting or knew that there was nothing seriously wrong with them, they would have realigned themselves a little bit. And this guy was still sprawled out in every odd ball position. So right away, first red flag, started assessing. All the signs and symptoms were pointing to a neck injury. So we needed some help to properly extricate this gentleman out. So I was trying to call for the fire department for a lift assist. And for whatever reason, our comms were down on multiple channels to our dispatch center. So I actually had to give our dispatch a landline. So there's a little bit of a delay, which sucked to get you guys rolling to help. But once you guys arrived, it was fantastic. You guys were able to open some gates up for us, relocate our ambulance up close to the scene where we were, and all hands on deck to properly spinal and extricate this individual out into the truck. So it worked really well. Again, just that mutual aid, thinking early, calling for help, you know, that patient-focused care. Like, could the two of us have done it? Sure. Would have taken a lot longer. But hey, if you got extra hands and this guy's potentially critical, yeah, that's why we're here as a team.
Yeah, you know, that was another one. It was on our end of it. It was, you know, basic. We were just the people that were there to lift up heavy things, put heavy things down. But in this case, it was do all of that, but do it, you know, gently and very, very methodical. You know, once we got on scene, you already gave the instructions to the deputy that was there first. He relayed the info to us in our truck. I shot up one of our FR attendants immediately, and then got the second one up there right away, and both of them were switched on, ready to work, ready to take any sort of direction well, and they got themselves right in there, help with some management, and then the rest of us kind of full-folded ourselves in, got that clam out there, got the patient rolled. Anytime that you're that concerned with spinal, like, many hands working in unison makes so much more sense. Like Todd's saying, like, let's just utilize that resource of having people that are there to help. Like Todd said there, that patient focused care, take an extra couple moments to get the extra hands there is going to be, the potential of a much better outcome for that patient. And yeah, I mean, we didn't do anything amazing, but it was just everybody showed up and worked and did what we were supposed to do. And yeah, hopefully the patient has the best chance of the most positive outcome as possible.
Yeah, 100%. I can't reiterate enough how much the importance of having trained help for that. Like, we had people there. One lady was a nurse, and yes, we could have rolled the patient safely. But the problem with using untrained people is they tend to do things too fast, too far, and don't listen to direction super clear. So we needed to move this person extremely slow, methodically, and just small rolls for what we were looking at. And without having trained FR people there, it would have thrown a lot of wrenches into it, that's for sure. So kudos to you guys for coming out and helping. It worked awesome. Scott, do you want to talk briefly about the other MVA the other night? It's been an MVA theme. And actually, before that power line call, you guys had another MVA.
Yeah, that one was, super, super basic. Vehicle exited the roadway, took out a couple vineyard posts, came resting to a stop in front of an orchard tree. I don't know what it was, like old, like thick cherry tree or apple tree or something. Likely more medically induced, just kind of like veered off the road, was slowed down by a couple of the smaller posts that he hit. Did some quick assessment, your guys' crew, and then just packaged for transport. So again, that was just, bread and butter. Let's make sure the vehicle's safe. We controlled the scene because it was, once we all got on scene, like, if everybody parked perfectly, we probably could have kept traffic rolling. But I mean, when there's a lot of hands working, let's just get that road shut down to single alternating traffic. We just let dispatch know, hey, this is what we have going on. It's going to have a little bit of a interruption and flow for a bit, but just let ambulance do what they need to do. We look after the vehicle. I think we were probably in and out of there in like 20 minutes, but yeah, it was definitely the theme is, the old motor vehicles this past week.
Yeah, it's funny. We're going from like wildfire right into our MVI season again. I mean, usually fall, winter, we start getting these rains again. And then, of course, the winter season shit goes off as well. But seems to be the theme. We as well had a couple of minor MVAs the other day. One with huge potential, rollover with, we were told the patient was trapped. We got up there and he just couldn't get out. He was standing there in his vehicle on his side, right? And very simple extrication to pop him out. But okay, moving on, training skills. So every year you guys go through kind of a yearly training skill evaluation. I believe you guys did some of that the other night.
So yeah, we talked about this before. It's a because we have in BC we have the playbook or what it's called now, the training, the skills, it's called firefighter structure skills, basic minimum standards.
Skills for my fire friends.
Yeah, it's the minimum standards. It used to be called the playbook, but now it's called the minimum standards. So they've essentially taken the 1001 and divided it into kind of into three parts. So there's the exterior only, interior, and then there's full service. So essentially these skills that we do on this night are all based on that exterior level. It's just like, I call it like a requal for exterior skills because, the interior stuff is more, you know, we have to have the burn building going and everything. So these skills are just kind of the bread and butter, the thing you learn, you know, the first few weeks when you're a firefighter. Years past, we actually had 9 stations and I kind of found those to be, they're almost too short and there wasn't enough members. Like there'd be a lot of downtime for the guys that were running each station. So what I decided this year, is to actually, drop one skill because we had 9 skills. I wanted to drop it down to 8. One of the skills was RIT, which is not obviously not an exterior skill. So we dropped that down. That'll be another night when we do a full RIT practice. So the skills we did, we had 4 stations. And I kind of try to combine them that would make sense. So, station 1 was where I was at. It was, PPE. So they had to don their, turnout gear under time. So we timed them. We didn't give them a cutoff time. We timed them and just like, okay, they're kind of racing against themselves. Like they obviously couldn't take them 5 minutes to put the gear on, but you know, they're all around that 1 minute mark, which is fine. And then, we got them to go on the truck and don their SCBA while in the truck, doors closed, as though we were going on call. So they went through that, and they got off. And this time I actually made them, like, years past, I got them to put their packs away. But because they're kind of both combined, I got them to keep their masks on. Not on air, just their masks on, and their pack, just to get used to that, kind of moving around with the pack on. And then the one that we attached to it was basic hose. So they started off, they had to pull a 2.5-inch hose, 50 feet. When they hit a mark on the ground, I got them to standing, solo run the 2.5-inch hose. They could use a snagger tool if they wanted to, or just, Jimi Hendrix style, like just freehand it. Most actually chose to freehand, just because I think they kind of get the fact that that snagger tool is going to be more of a longer fight. This is going to be a short one. So most of them, they ran that hose just fine. And then I got them to drop to kneeling. Same thing, ran the hose, kneeling solo. So ran the 2.5 solo. And then transition from the from that 2.5, they had to unscrew the smoothbore nozzle, screw on the 1.5, and then run the 1.5 standing, kneeling, and then emergency prone as though the fire is going over your head. So emergency prone. One of the guys said, this emergency prone thing is kind of comfortable. I said, yeah, actually, I did it twice this year, I think. I did it one, we had that trailer fire. I was trying to get underneath the fire, so I actually went prone, and there was another time I went prone. And it's actually, I always thought it was kind of a funny thing to do, but it's actually quite comfortable. And actually, you get some pretty good angles with it. So, anyways, that was basically that was the one skill station. So all that was just done one after another, bang, 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 and all done like solo firefighter. So there was 3 or 4 people per group, and you know, it took each, you know, it was like 15 minutes, 20 minutes for the team to get through the whole thing,
and then they were gone. With the prone skill, it is actually super important. Like I know one of my friends. Full-time department of the coast, what they practice when they're doing below grade fires going down a stairwell is they'll take the hose and they go prone head first right down low and just haul ass with the hose line in that low prone position and just rip down there, and then they can simply turn and action things if they need to. And they say they found it very effective and it's still very safe, because remember back in the day it was always like, oh, go backwards and sound every fucking stair and all this bullshit, right? Like, come on, like, use your head, right? There's other things. If you know where the fire is, you can safely get down things. So I said that's kind of their go-to, and they know where they're going is they tuck that hose down, get it down, and just start ripping guys down really fast. It's pretty effective,
right? Yeah, so those are the basic skills of those two events that are now combined into one. And then they moved on. And I don't know if you were the number two, Ash, but you can talk about your station.
Yeah, so myself and Adam, one of our other captains, we ran PPV and forcible entry. So we had our forcible entry door set up, and basically, like, we're just going to make a quick push in. So we have a door locked. Once we made access, we had to get the fan set up and get that up and running, talk about the proper distance away, when and when not to apply the fan. So yeah, teams kind of worked as a team, and we cycled through. Everybody had a chance to be on the fan, on the tools at the door, and the backup person at the door. But they, you know, with zero instruction, and like our door gives all like the cheat sheet, like it's on the door to go through all the motions of checking, try, gap, getting yourself through, sounding the floor, announcing that, hey, it's all over fire, blah blah blah.
No, that's on the door. All that stuff you just said. The end part wasn't
not the end part, yeah. No. But like the chalk set, try, gap. Yeah. Not that way. So all of like the first 4 steps are there, but then we also make sure that once the door is open, that they're sounding the floor to make sure that it's safe. They're checking the door to make sure there's not somebody, you know, collapsed there, and then announcing yourself as you go in. And then so once they have that set, they're like, "Okay, let's get the fan going. You're cleared to vent." So chatting about, you know, you have to have a vent team established. You have to have that flow path open, prior to engaging the fan, and then getting the fan set up. So we talked about the WTF, windows, and then fan. But then we also went on. So that's kind of a check, the ABC's checkbox of it. But then we also talked about, hey, like, what happens if, you know, now that we've got through this, because like ours was actually pretty fast once you cycled through it. So we started to talk about what happens if there's a door closed on the inside. What are those clues that you'll see? If you pressurize the house and nothing's really coming out the backside, is there things that we could do? So we did talk about bumping that fan up and getting that nice like 12-ish inch gap at the top of the door to allow the, you know, smoke and gases to escape. And then once that vent is in place, whether that team is inside and they've opened the door, and now it's flowing, you can then move that fan back and get that perfect cone formation over the door so you can really pressurize the building and get the best possible vent going. But the guys were all pretty dialed on it. We did have Scott put our like newest rookies in one group together, and by design, because there's some of these stations that they're still not like super trained up on. They've all seen it, but not a ton of reps through it, right? So as much as we were saying like pass fail, it was also an opportunity where we can walk them through and spend a couple extra moments with them. So that was ours. Everybody made it through. There was no failures, which is always really good. Definitely, you know, some things that we can visualize and see, hey, like we've got, you know, a couple things we should probably you know, maybe freshen up on, but everybody did, you know, really good.
So when you guys, just back to the door procedure, I know like we've talked about in the past, like what we call it, just to get the guys kind of stuck in their head of the procedures once you open that door, is the, like the live fire layout, right? So same thing, you know, open it up. We're seeing what the smoke is doing. And then of course, part of that is sounding the floor, looking for life around the door, because we know where people most likely will be for victims, right? And then where's the fire, and a quick little low look through the door for that layout. And we just like giving it that little bit of a nickname. I find it really works well for us, for the new guys to remember why we're looking for all these things.
Yeah, you know, 100%. So, I mean, that's one of the, you know, the biggest things, like the actual skill set and working through and getting that muscle memory of how to breach a door. Everybody's going to have their own little like tips and tricks that help them get in. But I mean, the big thing that we were looking for was like all of your commands. Like let's make sure that you're not hitting the like go whoa and like whatever. It's the hit drive stop. You want to make sure that you're, you know, like you're only using those, because like go and whoa and no, like they all sound very, very similar. So using that, and then once that door is open, like I can tell, like as the night progressed, and maybe some of our more senior guys, they get a bit silly at the end of it. But like, you know, the proper door management, like once you have that open, you manage the door, you can do that, you know, live fire layout, which is awesome. Doing that quick sweep, what do I have, yelling that back. So like vocal comms going back, so everybody around you knows, like, hey, we have zero fire, or maybe we do have fire, we have no patients. And then if we have nobody, you're still giving that, you know, all over fire, anyone there, nothing. All right, you get that door closed again, and then you relay that to your vent team, and then when you're ready to open the door again, then you start. But you don't just leave everything wide open and abandon the door, right? So those are the main things. Like, you want to be walking through, you're trying the door, you're checking it for heat, you're making sure that you have that hit drive stop, like all of those check boxes are hit. And then again, you're not making the fan go prior to getting that vent. Scott?
Yeah, I know it's we're doing force entry and we're using fan, and it is exterior skills. So that's one reason why we're doing that. Just that quick look in. It is still an exterior skill. It is actually in the exterior skill sets of the fire commissioner. So when I first read it, I was like, why are we doing force entry for a for an exterior skill? But to Todd's point, yeah, that's what we know. That's where most patients are found. If they're not found in their bedroom or whatever, they're found, you know, a lot are found at the door trying to manipulate the doorknob. So we breach the door, do that real quick, light fire layout, look in, nobody's in there, and then possibly push in. But that exterior skill set was designed for departments, not ours, but designed for other departments that that started off without going in. So they're, you know, maybe they're just going to do some exterior stuff. And you can do a lot of good work just being an exterior firefighter. Like, you know, you start venting, you can apply water, you can do all the stuff that you don't have to do from the inside. There's a lot of the fire can be fought from the outside, but it is important getting that breach, that door breach popped open, make sure no one's right there. And then maybe, you know, other guys that are trained or whatever come and push in for that, for the search.
Yeah, I really like what you guys do with just the kind of the re-qualification, if you will, for that term, of these skills, because it's what we've talked about in the past. It just bring things back to the basics at some point through the year, right? And just fine tune all these little things, because we all know in that heat of the moment, we do all those things in a very short of time. So slowing it down and just getting all those basics done just makes us better and better.
Yeah. So the next, not this isn't in any particular order, but another one of the sessions was ropes and ladders. And, you know, at first glance, you're kind of like, well, how do those two meet, match? But, you know, essentially you get to tie the halyard. And that's always a big thing, right? Everyone's like, you get there, you're like, okay, I forgot to tie clovers. Or, you know, every knot is like, you know, you train knots, and then, you know, you go a few months without training a knot and guys forget. So, the knots we're making them remember are pretty basic. It's like just, you know, the family of the figure eights, water knot, prussics, and the cloak hitch is the other one. So going through that, it's also important having your knots down, because a lot of time, and how it ties in with the ladders is because, you know, you're on the roof and you need tools brought up. So you throw the rope down, and the guys have to be able to tie that equipment off and hoist it. So that's kind of why it got tied in with that, and it made the most sense to tie those two together. And it didn't have to tie together, but it just made sense. Those two are kind of tied together into one. And then the two guys that ran it are really good with the ropes and ropes, knots, and the ladders.
How many skill sets did you guys do?
And then there's a fourth station. Fourth station was the water supply, so hydrant, and pumping, so running the actual pumper. So that one is pretty easy. We didn't want to keep pulling hose off the truck, so basically they just pulled a 2.5 out line out, a supply line to the hydrant. They had to hit the hydrant properly, set it up. We put two gate valves on ours, so we still run a 2.5 inch line off our hydrant. Just because that's our supply line on the back of our truck. We haven't went to the big 4-inch storts yet, like you guys do, Todd. And I'm kind of like, every time I see it, I'm like, and then I'm like, then I try to move it. It's a big pain. And I can honestly not remember the time where we've needed like a 4-inch line of water. Like I'm trying to think back on some of the bigger fires, maybe though when the high school burned down, or maybe when the hotel was burning. But at the same time, we could just hand bomb another 2.5 and topped it up with that supply line. So we just always kind of kept that 2.5 inch supply line, just because it's we can pull other 2.5 for other reasons. Like if we need a longer pull for our 2.5 tack line, we can always pull off the hose bed of the supply. So if people are wondering why we're still running a 2.5 inch supply line, that's why. But what our go-to is for that, to ensure we always are ready, we tie on two gate valves, 2.5 inch gate valves. So we don't just run one. We run two 2.5 inch gate valves. And that way, if another truck's needed or if a tender's needed to fill up, they can fill up right there. So that was the deal with that is, yeah, they had to do proper foot placement for the hose coming off the truck, even though it wasn't coming off the truck. And then tie in the two gate valves, attach the supply line, or sorry, flush it, attach the supply line, and then move down the line and put a hose clamp on. And then while all that's happening, another member is on the pump, starting the pump, getting it ready, and they had to push, I think Rob had a 4-3 line connected. So just push some water out of a line just to get that pressure up.
Yeah, so I mean that was basically it for the night. We went, yeah, it was about an hour and a half, 2 hours, kind of spot on what kind of we always figure it's going to take. A lot of like quick reps, very basic skills, and I really like doing it in the fall, like we just did, because we are getting ramped up for our live fire season, and like these are all skill sets that, you know, we do. It's our bread and butter stuff. Nothing's challenging, but this is the bread and butter stuff that, like, if you don't do it, you can still get rusty, and like that's okay. Like we're not, like, we don't get to train every single day. Like, you know, like some of these skill sets we might not brush up on for another couple months. And you're doing it every single time that you pull a hose, that you throw a ladder, but you're not getting, I guess, instructed or watched or whatever. There's no chance for like, hey, like maybe try doing this, maybe try doing that. So when you can just kind of stand back and like, we don't, when people are doing, so like if somebody were to come up and they missed a step doing the breach at the force entry door, like we don't go in there and be like, hey, nope, wrong. You let them go and like they did what they were, you know, supposed to do. And then we'll say, hey, like, is there anything that you think that you missed? And if they can tell me right away, like, okay, good. Like, I'm not going to make you start over again. We're not going to reset the entire thing. If you can tell me what was wrong, great. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And you're still working as a team. So again, like, if you're up there doing the breach and you have your backup and your backup person catches, hey, let's maybe try this. Hey, Let's not forget to try it first, right? We don't have a doorknob, so that was one thing that everybody always forgot is like to try, right? So they would go, maybe check it for heat, and then they go straight into, like, they know it's locked because they're being, you know, tested on breach. But like saying, like speaking, so like after the first group went through, we're like, talk us through every step, like what you're doing, vocalize what you're doing. Step one, I'm checking for heat. I want to know what's there. And I don't care if you pull your glove back and check with the back of your hand. And if you do that, tell me why you use the back of your hand. So I'm not going to burn my hand. So I'm still in the fight, even if it's hot. Or
rip it apart on a piece of steel that one of our guys did.
Absolutely. So one of our guys wasn't watching, you know, caught a sharp edge on something. And I mean, it's not his fault at all. It was dark. And I mean, it's a breech door. So it's got nicks and bangs and a couple of the bolts holding through the handle on the other side, and ended up cutting himself pretty good. So I mean, you can be injured, and that's why I use the back of your hand and not the front. But if a guy also said, yeah, like I got my partner on the hose and they sprayed the door and there's no effective heat. Okay, perfect. So that for me is good enough. Like you're talking about checking. So I don't care how you do it, as long as you're checking, right? We didn't have a hose there. We didn't have somebody on a nozzle, but everybody, you know, vocalized it that, hey, I would have a team there. We're on our way in, blah, blah, blah. Okay, perfect. So again, like if you fail, but you can catch what you did wrong, it's still a pass to me because you and your team figured it out. 99% of the things that went wrong was people didn't try because there was no knob. So it's not designed to have instruction. So it goes really, really well. And again, being in the fall before we go back into the live fire, I think is great because it's just getting ourselves and getting those skills kind of like re-energized before we go back to live fire burning.
Well, and also, you know, I know it's going to... Well, hopefully it doesn't have to cover ass one day, but it will cover the butt one day when, you know, if anything was to happen. A lot of departments, you know, they'll get their 1001. You know, I know a lot of firefighters who have their certificate, and then I have a certificate. I never need to train again. So a lot of departments will, you know, obviously they train all the time, but I don't think it's very often they will do a full requal of those really basic skills yearly. And that's kind of where I took it from. I took it from, I'm watching law enforcement guys qualify with their pistol every year. It's a very easy qualification. They just have to hit certain marks. It's not, you're not a gunfighter. You're not, you know, it's not like advanced tactics. It's literally like the basics of how to shoot your firearm safely, properly, hitting a target. And there's some marks to hit. So that was kind of the idea when I kind of made this thing. And I think every year guys kind of like it. It's kind of like that reset. Like you said, it's a reset for the year. We're after the summer. We do that, you know, that we do this skills test to make sure everyone's kind of ready. And then we go into live fire season.
Yeah. Like I said before, I think it's fantastic kind of grouping things together like that. Instead of just kind of in a couple of nights or one night, it really brings back just the basics and just reinforces that team building and all the steps that we need to do. So I really like it. One thing I want to bring up, one thing we just started practicing with that's new to us, we don't have it in use yet, is we got one of those car fire blankets for electric vehicle fires. So we purchased the Darley brand car fire blanket. And it's pretty simple use. It's kind of 5 steps. You're going to flake it out with SCBA. You can do a 2-firefighter method or a 4-firefighter method to deploy it and basically just float it right over top of the vehicle, tuck all the ends in, and then cool it and check it with your thermal camera and Bob's your uncle, right? So our next step, once everybody's kind of used to flaking it over some of our sims and some of our cars, is we want to get it up into our live fire evolutions that are coming up here this month. And then see how it actually uses. We got one of the multiple use ones, so I think it's good for 30 vehicle fires. So that should be interesting. I think once we use it a little bit, we'll try and get a little bit of video pictures and get it out there as well.
And you mainly got that for EV fires, not for regular car fires.
Yeah, I think our go-to is going to be for electric vehicle fires. I don't know what they're going to, how they're going to actually want to put into operations yet. But yeah, I mean, you can basically use it for any vehicle fire you want. But whether they want to keep it for EVs or maybe it's just going to be special use deployment if we have a limited water source or whatever. Say we have one up just out of our district and forestry tasks us on it or something. Maybe we can use that. Who knows? We'll see how it kind of unfolds in the months to come. Any more guys to chat about? Or jump into some shout outs. All right. Ash, Modus.
Yeah, Modus, Claim Your Fame is going to be their snagger tool, but they have so much more now. Scott's been demoing the radio strap. We can probably do a good show there. Working out really well. I've been rocking that for a couple weeks now. I'll take that over on Thursday and see how I like it. Yeah, John's on his patch. But yeah, they got force entry gear with their wedges, their heavy hitter. They've got right next to you there, John, to your right, it's going to be the X glove for Auto X. That's becoming the new normal for all of us. That's going to be our new issue Auto X glove. So as we need, we are resupplying up with those. They've got their passive entry kit, which I actually just cleaned up off the table here, but they got a bunch of stuff for passive entry, which is great, and a ton of their textiles. So check out their social medias, check out their Fire Life video, which we're super pumped to be a part of. And if you like what you see, use discount code DTFF5 for 5% off your order.
Awesome. Scott, stop the bleed.
Yeah, if you're missing a finger, stop the bleed. Little tiny tourniquet. There's no tiny tourniquet. Yeah, stop the bleed. Three methods of bleeding control are direct pressure, wound packing, or tourniquet application. If you're going to use a tourniquet, use a good one. Yeah, if you want to become an instructor, stopthebleed.org, or check your local stopthebleed.com. There's .ca, .australia, .everything. Basically, in your region or your side of your country, look it up, because each one has slightly different curriculum to it, and it's all free.
100%. And on that as well, you know, if your department's not doing it, get one of your training officers, somebody, or if there's a medic on it that wants to be the lead on it, take the course and the training, get everything set up for your department. You make really easy props. You can check out our YouTube for some of those prop ideas, and tie it into your FR practice. Tied it into a lot of our stuff, and it works really well. And then the other thing is, throw in chest seals, man. Chest seals, they're a simple dressing. They're totally underrated. People don't use them and talk about them enough. But yeah, they should go hand in hand. Wolf Tree Coffee, Ash.
Yeah, 100%. Wolf Tree Coffee. We're drinking the heck out of it. They got tons of blends. We're really partial to the Initial Attack blend. Every pound of Initial Attack that they sell, $2 is donated to the Honor House Society. So it's a cause that's pretty near and dear to us. So they are shipping. Check them out on their social medias. They just did a big push out. I think it was International Coffee Day the other day. So we made sure to share that, because we're a really big supporter of theirs, obviously. So check them out online. They're on the Facebooks, the Instagrams, and they have their website, wolftreecoffee.com. Like I say, they are shipping. They do Okanagan, BC here. They do deliveries up and down the south, but they will ship to you as well. So make sure we give them some support, because it's a heck of a product. It's a great local company. And again, with that, with the initiative there to support the Honor House Society, it's an awesome thing to support. So,
yeah, absolutely. Then, of course, you've got us. So check us out on the Facebook site, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. And we still have some shirts left over. So go on to our Facebook and you can do the DTFF store. We'll give you a link to our shirts. Oh, Scott's got a shirt there to show you. Our Moose shirts, they're pretty awesome. Thank you to all of our listeners who have purchased them and are sending us some social media images and whatnot on them. We love seeing them out and about and getting pictures back from wherever somebody's rocking the shirt. So really appreciate everybody for that. And we will ship it anywhere. So reach out, send us a message, and we'll get that off to you. Any more for any more? Ash?
Nope. Thanks a lot for listening. Have a good night.
Scott?
Have a good night.
Scott's trying to work his microphone. All right. As always, stay safe, stay DTF. Thanks.